Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. It's great to have you with us. Now, a fresh wave of violence against Rohingya Muslims broke out on March 20th when Buddhists attacked dozens of houses and mosques for 3 days. Now, Myanmar's government has been repeatedly criticized for failing to protect the country's Muslim community. But surprisingly, rather than taking a drastic measure to stop the barbaric bloodshed, the government is saying that the newly given freedom of speech has made the current killings unavoidable. Welcome back. Now, to discuss the current sorry state of affairs affecting the Muslims, defenseless Muslims in Myanmar, we'll be joined by two top guests. Now, here in Tehran, I'm very pleased to be joined by an eminent human rights campaigner from the Islamic Human Rights Commission based in London. Dr. Masud Shajara, it's a great pleasure to have you with us.
The pleasure is mine.
Thanks very much for coming over. Now, let me tell you that Masud Shajara is the chair of Islamic Human Rights Commission, which is an independent human rights organization and is, of course, a not-for-profit campaign research and advocacy organization based in London, UK. Now, in our GOM studio, I'm very pleased to be joined by a prolific writer and analyst, Dr. Mohsen Qanbari. Welcome to Central Stage.
Thank you very much. This is my pleasure to be in this program.
The pleasure is all mine. Now, let me just tell you that Dr. Qanbari is head of the research group of politics and Mahdiism at Mahdiism Research Center. Time for a short break, but after the break, we'll be talking about the current situation of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar and whether the government is doing anything to stop this barbaric bloodshed.
Many Rohingya Muslims are believed to have been killed and wounded and thousands displaced in attacks by cruel Buddhist extremists over the course of the past months, and it seems there's no end to this sorry state of affairs anytime soon. In an effort to justify the deadly violence, Myanmar has said that the ethnic violence is unavoidable as the country is undergoing a transition to democracy following the end of authoritarian military rule 2 years ago. Presidential spokesman Yi Tu was quoted by AFP as saying, "We cannot avoid this storm of chaos, but what we are trying to do is create a good legal framework to overcome all these challenges." Yi Tu added that new freedoms allowed by the reformist government of President Thein Sein have led to the wave of hostility and hate speech, as several Buddhist monks have been reported to be among those accused of provoking violence and increasing anti-Muslim rhetoric through the internet. He also said, quote, "In the past, the military tightly controlled the press and the political movements. With freedom of expression, we have found that there was a lot of hate speech, extremist religious ideas, and racial discrimination." This comes as Myanmar Army Forces have, among other things, allegedly provided the extremist Buddhists with containers of petrol for torching the houses of Muslim villagers. Muslims and rights groups have also slammed the Asian state security forces for allegedly standing by during the recent unrest when Buddhist mobs went on the rampage. Only in March, more than 40 people were killed and a number of mosques and homes were burned in central Myanmar, indicating a rise in the persecution of Muslims in the country. Having said that, whether one finds the recent comments by the government justifiable or not, the fact of the matter is that the fire of hatred continues to kill innocent Rohingya Muslims, and the government has most certainly badly failed to stop this bloodshed, which is nothing short of barbaric.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, the Muslim minority of Rohingyas in Myanmar accounts for about 5% of the country's population of nearly 60 million. Now, the persecuted minority has faced torture, neglect, and repression since the country achieved independence in 1948. Now, a Myanmar expert with the International Crisis Group, a non-governmental organization, believes that some agent provocateurs with radical anti-Muslim agendas are at work in the country, including, of course, influential Buddhist monks preaching intolerance and hatred of Muslims. Masud, Buddhists seem to be very peaceful people, don't they?
Yes, it is, and I think it would be really wrong to sort of brush everyone with the same brush, but also to just blame the Buddhists. Right. I mean, this problem has been going on for a very long time.
Right.
The junta in Burma have been targeting Myanmar Muslims many, many years. I mean, our last report, which was around 8 years ago, really identified exactly what was going on. But what was we were hoping is that after the sort of democracy coming into the land, we will see end of this oppression. I mean, you know, these Rohingya Muslims have been raped, tortured, and disregarded of all their basic rights for many, many years. But what has actually happened now is that this new sort of nation, to identify its identity as a nation and bond all these elements of the juntas and the democracy and the sort of the Buddhist sort of elements, are bonding on a basis of hatred of Muslims in the form of.
So you're saying that this is the unifying factor.
This is a unifying factor, and you know, you could see that, you know, the pro-democracies are saying exactly the same thing that juntas were saying, and then the whole thing is being echoed by the monks. So it's actually a bonding factor, and to create this sort of a new identity of a Myanmar sort of citizenship.
Well, I understand, but you know, the thing is that you know, Buddhism seems to be a peaceful religion, and monks, they have to preach, you know, peaceful attitudes and actions, not hatred. I mean, I think it's not within the principles of Buddhism, is it?
No, it isn't. And you know, and I think, you know, it's been very clearly identified that Buddhists around the world are disassociating themselves from this. But I think we need to sort of go back and say that, you know, it's not really one group. It's not the juntas of past. It also includes the democrats of today and peaceful monks of you know, combining their efforts and targeting these innocent people. And, you know, at the heart of it is denial of the citizenship to people who have been living there since the seventh century. You know, and it really is a barbaric sort of concept. Once you exclude them as a citizens, then the only question is ethnic cleansing and genocide, which is, unfortunately, we see in the genocidal acts that is taking place. And we had a sort of incident now in the capital, sort of only last week, that a Muslim sort of orphanage was torched. And the government is saying it wasn't torture, it was an accidental fire. But all other observers are actually saying that there were petrol and there were fires. And that has not been investigated appropriately. So the whole thing is spreading much wider than the Rohingya Muslims. Other Muslims in the area are being targeted. And indeed other groups which are seen as a minority.
You know, there are a number of examples when actually Buddhists put themselves to protest against,
absolutely,
you know, the things that they didn't you know, find suitable. So probably these Buddhists, I mean, they go under some sort of training and probably some sort of the things which have to do with probably not these lively earthly matters. So they need to have a sort of divine attitude in order to be able to be Buddhist. And as I said, they've tortured themselves. They were not supposed to torture other people.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, really, the fact, you know, is that you know, this whole behavior, it's outside the norms of humanity, and let alone Buddhism,
right,
and so forth. And it's been done, but I would go beyond. I mean, you can't blame Buddhism for this thing. What we actually have to blame is the politicians. You know, politicians who have been in exile and, you know, are champions of democracy are turning around and saying these guys are not, you know, part of this citizenship, you know, and they don't have no citizenship. Indeed, they're outsiders. Or, as I said, although for centuries they've been there, they've actually been there longer than the creation of this new state. So really, I think it's absurd. And those sentiments, which were coming both from the Democrats and the juntas and the military and the Buddhist leadership, is what legitimizes these acts.
Great. Thanks very much indeed, Masoud, for that. Now, we know that on March 20th, over 40 people were killed and a number of mosques were burnt due to religious violence in several towns in central Myanmar. Myanmar's Islamic Religious Affairs Council and the Myanmar Muslim National Affairs Organization later appealed to the government of President Thein Sein to take swift action to stop the violent attacks. Now, later on March the 28th, the UN Special Reporter on Human Rights in Myanmar said he had received reports that soldiers and police sometimes stood by while atrocities have been committed before their very eyes by well-organized Buddhist mobs in the central city of Mektila. Dr. Qambari, how likely is it that such a government will take any drastic action or measure to put an end to this bloodshed?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. What can I say here is that as my brother said over there in that studio, that we don't want to blame Buddhism or Buddhists, but some of the groups that are extremist groups, they are committing some torture, oppression against the minority of Muslim groups in Myanmar. But I want to say this is not an action of that certain group, but it seems to be well-organized action, that there is a great support and sponsor behind that. And if the politicians are not going to support these groups, some monks cannot do such an action. And I think this is supported strongly by the government, by the president, Thein Sein, that he is saying we are not, you know, the responsible here, because we are in a transition from military to democracy, and this is the result of going to democracy. And when we are going to experience democracy, then freedom of speech, freedom of activities, freedom of movement are very natural and normal in an atmosphere that we are calling it as a democratic atmosphere. So unfortunately, they say out of democracy we are experiencing such a violent actions. And I can say yes, Buddhism is the religion of peace, and Buddhists should be the preachers of peace. But unfortunately, the activists and practitioners that they are calling themselves as the followers of one faith, such as the Buddhism that we are experiencing now in Myanmar. Unfortunately, they are not good representatives of that faith, because if they're claiming that they're following Buddha, what happened to Buddha? Buddha left the throne of kingship, and he went following to find some solution for relieving the torture, the suffering and the pain of people. And finally, he find out that, okay, if we want to reach the calmness and peace of mind, we have to cut the belonging toward, you know, this world or our passions or desires. But what they're doing now, Buddhists, I mean, in Myanmar, in different corner of the world, unfortunately, they are showing their thirst and the hunger of power and their linkage to the politicians. And this is not the real Buddhism that they're following. If they hear the voice of their heart, the voice of Buddha, he says that do not do these things and stop violating the rulings of Buddha.
Okay.
This is, I think, out of the political actions and political objectives that they are seeking.
Great. Thanks very much for that, Dr. Qambari. Now, on Friday, presidential spokesman, during an interview in the capital, said that the deadly ethnic violence in the Asian country was unavoidable as the country is undergoing a transition to democracy. He added, quote, and Masud, I just want to read that quote, which I think is really surprising, isn't it? He basically said that in the past, the military tightly controlled the press and political movements. With freedom of expression, we have found that there was a lot of hate speech, extremist religious ideas, racial discrimination, and co. So he's basically saying that they can't avoid the current chaos. How justifiable is that, do you think?
I mean, let us be frank about this. I mean, our reports and our investigation for many, many years has identified that the juntas were deliberately abusing the Rohingya Muslims. They were being thrown out of the country, they were being raped, even pregnant women were being raped, systematically abused. They weren't even allowed to be educated. Even when they wanted to get married, they had to get permission to marry. Really oppressive. You know, you can't really put any limits on it. This is
so
the junta.
Before this, newly given democracy.
Absolutely. These sort of juntas were actually committing all these crimes before. And now it's been sort of escalated further under the concept of nationalism and so forth, or supranationalism. And also, I think we need to be fair that in the recent events, we have had reports from the ground that over the last few weeks, when attacks were made against Muslims and mosques were burned, and you were showing the footage, in many cases, Buddhists came forward and protected the Muslims. So the issue is not just Buddhists and others. It's the issue of creating a super nationalism, trying to create a forged sort of identity which needs to have an enemy. And this is what Hitler did. You know, it was an issue of democracy or democratization. This is actually what happened in Bosnia Herzegovina. To create this new Serb identity, they actually had to have an enemy and target that enemy. And this is the reality of what's going on. And international community is completely silent on it. The, you know, all these Democrats are silent on it. You know, the juntas are blaming the Democrats, the Democrats are blaming the junta, and the Buddhists are being blamed by all sides. The reality is that there has to be a change and recognition that these people belong to the land that for many years their forefathers have lived there. And they're not external sort of entities. They actually need to be recognized as citizens and given the full rights. And that is the failure of politicians, and that's the failure of international community to force. Look, we are going into Libya and bomb you know, the hell out of them because we want to preserve human rights and stop the suffering. Here, all we need to do is put a slight pressure on these governments, and they're obliged. And we're not doing it.
Right. And, you know, lots of, probably not enough, but we've had lots of discussions going on about Palestine and the persecution of Palestinians. But, you know, when it comes to Palestine of Asia, and that's the name actually which was given to this community by the UN itself. So Palestine of Asia, probably it's not, justice is not done to this area.
Probably that name was given because they don't want to do anything regarding the Myanmar in the same way that nothing was being done regarding the Palestinians. The reality is that the international community is doing nothing whatsoever. And it takes very little, very, very little to actually resolve this issue. You don't need to go into wars or anything else. You don't need to bomb people. Just all you have to do is put pressure. And the international community actually is quite happy to see the creation of this new entity, even at the cost of the lives of innocent people.
Right, great. Thanks very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other aspects of this bloodshed, which is unfortunately currently going on in Myanmar. So please do stay with us. Hello again. Now, a few months ago, Myanmar president suggested that Myanmar could end the crisis by expelling all of its Rohingyas or by having the United Nations resettle them. So that was a very strange statement. Myanmar army forces have allegedly provided the extremist Buddhists with containers of petrol for torching the houses of Muslim villagers. And in some other cases, as we mentioned earlier, they've stood by when Buddhist mobs went on the rampage. Now, such statements and actions by the government has made some analysts believe what's happening, Dr. Gambari, they believe that what's happening in Myanmar is not sectarian violence. It is state-supported ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, that's correct, exactly. I agree with you. It is not sectarian fighting or objection. Rather, it is something political or what ethnic cleansing or something like that happening nowadays in Myanmar. And what the president of Myanmar said, is not offering solution for the problem or for the crisis that we are suffering and we are seeing nowadays in Myanmar, but it is getting rid of some part of Myanmar that are Muslims. So this is it's not difficult to say, okay, if you want to solve the problem, okay, I want to have to show you the way for that, and it is all Muslims should flee Myanmar to the camps or refugee camps held by UN or other countries, other organizations. So I think the problem that we have in different corners of the world, this is not only Myanmar or Muslims in Myanmar that are suffering from this crisis, but also what's happening in Syria and in Bahrain, in Pakistan, in Iraq, in different countries, that Muslims or sectarian problems or fighting some followers of some sect of religions with the others. This is the problem that's coming from outside the countries, I think, and there is objectives or what we can say the aims of politicians outside the world that they want to reach some certain issues, and they're dividing to rule. This is one of the great rulings that we have among the politicians of the West. So they want to divide to rule, but here, which party should be persecuted? If there is a Muslim party, then they are the best case to be persecuted, to be get rid of from the country. So over there, out of this rulings or the division for the ruling, is going to be implemented in Burma, Myanmar, and we see that the owner of the country, the ruler, the president, is going to play in the framework that is planned from the others for them. And unfortunately, for the sake of that, they don't want to stop the things, and the police is seeing and watching only silently without doing any action against this extremist groups of Buddhists.
Great. Thanks very much indeed for that. Now, President Obama became the first American president to visit Myanmar on November 19th last year. Now, during his speeches, he also referred to the situation of Rohingya Muslims. But has this trip, Masood, made any real impact on the current situation of Rohingya Muslims, do you think?
No, it didn't. He actually said as little as he could have possibly said. Under the what is happening and the highlight of the whole ethnic cleansing or the genocidal act which has been played out, he actually said the least that he could have said. And indeed, they have put no condition, no pressure on the government to acknowledge their responsibility under international law. I mean, here you are, the citizens of this country. Can you imagine if these citizens were, let's say, Americans or the Jewish community somewhere or any other group. Can you imagine that the president will go down there, red carpet treatment, and welcome the changes and actually just touch on the issue? I think what the international community and indeed the United States is doing by its inaction is actually creating the environment where genocide could take place, and why those definitions under international law is responsible for those genocide. And I really believe that we're talking about a very small section of community who undoubtedly are the citizens of the nation. Let's acknowledge it. You know, and if you don't acknowledge it, then and you know, you cannot force this acknowledgement, then the only other way is ethnic cleansing. And that's why politicians now, clearly, I mean, these are statements that is coming out of the politicians in Myanmar, are basically promoting ethnic cleansing.
But you know, the problem is that they say that you have to go back to Bangladesh. Bangladesh says we don't want them. Nobody really wants them.
Look, they're not Bangladeshis, first of all. You know, as I said, they've been living down there for centuries.
Right.
Long before the state of Myanmar was created, you know. So, you know, they are older citizens than the creation of the state. But also what is happening, I mean, there was an influx of people running away to go to Bangladesh.
Right.
Bangladesh wasn't accepting them. Mm. They were sending them back. Many of them died in the sea. I was in London at the time. There was an interview where, in a program where I was taking part with the ambassador of Bangladeshi ambassador. Mm. And Bangladeshi ambassador unashamedly was standing and saying, these are all criminals and so forth. We cannot allow them to come into our country. Mm. Now, they're not just being abandoned by US and the West and you know, their own fellow politicians and the citizens, but they're also being abandoned by the rest of the Muslims community. Mm. Why is Qatar is not actually putting slight pressure on these or encouragement? Why is not really more? You see, the issue right now is the process of ethnic cleansing on one side, and the fact that no aid is being allowed to go in to reach these people by the government. The government is not just a bystander. The government is actively involved in ethnic cleansing, denying aid to go through, and we have tried from Malaysia and others to actually send aid, and every single time is being blocked by the government.
But what about Aung San Suu Kyi? I mean, everybody used to think that, okay, she's been under house arrest for decades. She's not a normal human being. She's been under pressure herself. I mean, so she knows what it's like to be under pressure, what it's like to be persecuted. So why is it that she is also saying nothing?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. You know, someone who's, as you say, was oppressed, someone who should understand that, you know, everyone needs to be acknowledged with their citizenship, and as citizens of, I mean, for the benefit of the country, there has to be harmony. But this is not new. Even when she was in house arrest, she was approached regarding the Rohingyas situation, and she said that these are not citizens of the country. So, you know, even at the time that she was being oppressed, she was actually quite willing to oppress others.
Is she worried that she'll lose support and probably she'll not be elected in the next presidential elections?
I don't really think so. I don't think that this was a popular movement to hate Rohingyas. This was actually created by politicians for a political reason, rather than something that is actually was naturally existed within the structures of the country.
Great. And Dr. Gambari, we know that if not a nation is doing anything to stop this, we've had in other similar cases, we've had the United Nations taking action and a number of other nations. And here, Dr. Chajar was talking about a number of Muslim countries also not taking any drastic measure to solve this problem. So why isn't anybody doing anything to stop this bloodshed, do you think?
Well, the reason returns back to the followers of any religion. As we talked about Buddhism, and we said Buddhism itself is the religion of peace as it's known today. But the followers of Buddhism, some of them, not all of them, are going to do wrong. And then it is something seem to be that Buddhism itself is something not so peaceful religion. And it is the case with respect to the other religions and the followers of religions. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, at least these three Abrahamic religions are the religions of peace, as we know. And what happens is that the followers of these religions and faith are, you know, going to do it in another way that is against their faith. For example, Christians should say no for this persecution, for this torture, for this violence. Jews should say that, and Muslims should say that. But unfortunately, we see that just few, you know, people, group of people, Muslims such as Iran or some Shia Muslims around the world, are shouting against this violence and torture. But there are many Muslims that they're calling themselves as the real followers of the tradition of Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but unfortunately they don't say anything. Why? The reason is exactly that turns back to the weakness and you know the problem misunderstanding of the followers of Islam, right. Because they call themselves as Muslim, but unfortunately they're seeking the aims and the politics and the benefits of political benefits, I mean, in their world. So if it is not beneficial for them to say anything against, you know, torture happening in Burma, Myanmar, they don't say. If it is beneficial, they say. But unfortunately, they are looking at the mouth of great powers, superpowers, like Western countries, for example. I mean, the Arab countries or the majority of Muslim countries, they don't say anything because they observe this silence in the international arena. Because they don't say anything, they are keeping silent. If they see that they have some say over there, then they will start saying something. But unfortunately, again, I want to address Muslims and remind them a great statement of Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, say that whoever from Muslims hearing that there is a Muslim calling the Muslims for his help and they don't answer him, they cannot be called as a Muslim, as Muslim communities. Oh, Muslims, you're calling yourself as the followers of the traditional Prophet. These are Muslims. And there is a great tragedy of Muslims happening nowadays. Why you're keeping silent? You have to shout at the people who are torturing.
Great. Thanks very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking whether we can cover this. We'll also ask Masood whether his organization is doing something to cover this issue and send a message out to people who are not aware of the chaos in Myanmar. So please just stay with us for that and more. Hello again. It's great to have you back with us. We're talking about the situation of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. And this is a situation which really needs to be discussed because not much attention has been given to the sorry state of affairs in that country. And we know that, Masood, your organization is basically has been founded to protect human rights and to also convey the message to the world outside that, okay, this particular part of the Muslims or Muslim community is being persecuted or probably is being treated unfairly. So what have your organization, Islamic Human Rights Commission, based in London, done to cover this issue?
We have been trying to support the Rohingya Muslims for many, many, many years, long before this crisis hit the TV screens of the people. We actually try to address the issue of the refugees, both on the Burmese side and also on the side of the sort of Bangladesh and in India and elsewhere. And you know, there is a large number in Malaysia, Indonesia, and Saudi Arabia, and they have been oppressed for a very long time. But also, we have raised the issue. We actually, with our partners on the Universal Justice Network, we managed to actually send some aid across, and a shipment, two shipments, will actually try to break the sort of through and get through to the people. We just supported.
But didn't get through, right?
No, didn't get through. But still, aid was given forward to the people over there. The other issue is that, you know, highlighting the reality of the ugliness of this thing. We made three other reports. We have actually held two sessions, in two sessions of UN at the Geneva, we actually hold a special program on the Myanmar and actually did side panels. We have presented report to the UN, and one of our colleagues was until 2 days ago over there sending photographs and highlighting what it was taking place. But I actually have to say that, you know, organizations like us, or indeed even Amnesty International and others, alone cannot resolve this thing. There has to be the political will.
Right.
And that political will does not exist. It doesn't exist within the Western sort of nation. It doesn't exist within the UN. And unfortunately, it doesn't exist even in OIC and Muslim countries. I mean, if it wasn't the fact that this thing was highlighted by some media in Iran and actually, you know, internationally was picked up, it probably wouldn't have even been picked up by the international media.
And you mentioned the media. What we see at the moment, what we've seen so far, has been citizen journalism going on when it comes to Myanmar. So in terms of covering the issue, is Islamic Human Rights Commission in a position to use the media to cover this
story? We are using the Twitters and the Facebook, and with the help of some journalists who actually are brave enough to go in, and we are supporting them to go in and getting the information out. We are supporting the information sort of gathering inside Myanmar. But at end of the day, if TV channels are not allowing these footage to go on, and you know, you're not really going to bring the sort of awareness that is necessary
in the absence of mass media coverage. But you know, the thing is, the mass, it seems that everybody is afraid of you know, going forward talking about this issue. I don't know why.
Well, you see, I mean, on one side, the United States and the West doesn't want to rock the boat. All they are interested is to take Myanmar away from China into their bosoms, you know, and it doesn't matter how much crimes they're going to commit. They've never been concerned about the crimes committed by the governments who supports them. And on the other side, you know, sort of there's also the Chinese and so forth are not really willing to raise this issue. And, you know, to be fair, China doesn't really get involved in the politics of the countries that it's got association with. Doesn't interfere in the internal affairs. And then international communities like, you know, Muslim nations, Turkey and, you know, the Qatar and so forth are more concerned to implement the US policies in Middle East than to actually rise up for the oppressed Muslims, be it in Palestine, in Kashmir, or indeed Myanmar and anywhere else. So unfortunately, these innocent people have been abandoned and left to be in the sort of under the crutches of these people who are committed to ethnically cleanse them. And really comes back to the very few people and institutions like us, and we have to do everything we can. We cannot allow in today, in this century, to people to be massacred and ethnically cleansed in this way.
So this cannot easily be stopped, and probably the prospect of a future, a bright future for Rohingya Muslims is not very, I think, very possible, is it?
It's not possible, but I'm actually one to believe in
great. We have just about 20 seconds.
Power of justice.
Right.
And, you know, the truth and justice will always prevail.
Right.
But we need to be on the side of the truth and justice and force forward and rely on Allah to actually find the solution.
Great, I hope so too. Thank you very much indeed for that. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. But before I go, I'd like to thank our two top guests. We had Dr. Mohsen Ghambari, head of the research group of politics and Mahdism at Mahdism Research Center over the satellite from Qom in our Qom studio. We also had Dr. Masud Shajara, the chair of Islamic Human Rights Commission based in London, UK. Thanks very much to both of you for coming over and for talking to us for those insights. Until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you. Thank you very much. Great to have you with us. Thank you.